Well, hello, and welcome back to another great episode of Ghost Stories Told from the South. I am your host, Stephen LeBooth, and I got some skelly stuff for you today, everybody. All right, man. Sorry, it's been a while. I took about a week off, and I thought I had enough stuff caught up so it wouldn't affect me, and I didn't. And then when I came back to record, you know, there's always, I don't know, just sometimes some weird stuff goes on sometimes with the ghost story podcast. Sometimes I'll have some technical issues or something, you know. Well, my book that I use, my notebook I use that I have all my ghost story stuff in, just up and disappeared. It's gone. It ain't no more. I don't know where it went, but it really makes me mad because I had a lot of my stuff in there from, I got probably 100 episodes worth of stuff in there. So yeah, I had to go back to the drawing board and whip up some more stuff. Thank goodness I still had some notes that I haven't done yet. So, but I am back. No more times off for me, guys. I'm back for good. Yay. But I hope everybody's having a great week. I hope you've been having some fun. And I hope you've been telling some scary stories around the old... Oh, sorry. Yeah, I even had a Red Bull before I recorded. But anyways, hope everybody's having a great week and being scary. I got some great stories today, guys. And I just want to give a shout out to everybody who keeps listening to the show and promoting it and telling everybody about it. My numbers are growing. Just want to say thank you very, very much. And go to my YouTube page, too. I got a YouTube channel that I put my ghost stories on, so check me out there, too, guys. And you can get this podcast that you're listening to now, like on Spotify. Pretty much any platform that you can listen to your podcast, I am there. So, yeah. But I got some good stuff for you. And I guess, without further ado, we'll get on with it, everybody. You know the routine, man. Go snuggle up by the fire. Get you a nice warm blankie. Get you some hot tea or hot cocoa. Or some coffee. Sit back and relax. Strap in and get ready to be scared. All right. Our first story takes us to Shadows on the Ticha Plantation in Louisiana. Matter of fact, it's in New Libera, Louisiana. Hope I'm saying that right. And if I'm not, I apologize. All right, let's get into it. All right. Deep in the city of New Iberia, along the musky waters of Bayou Tichy, lies an interesting plantation home, ever so deservingly named Shadows on the Tichy. We have often heard the old saying, if these walls could talk. If this is the case, you could hear quite an earful. You could hear quite an earful out of this beautiful home. And sorry if you hear a lot of background noise. It's getting kind of stuffy in here, so I had to turn on the fan. So if you hear that fan in the background, I'm very sorry. I'm trying to keep my volume down a little bit on my mic so it won't pick up so much. But I hope you can still hear me good. But I do got a big mouth and I'm loud, so. Anyways, over its many years of being built, it has seen its fair share of sickness and death, much of it being documented in over 17,000 pages of the previous owner's accounts. known as the Weeks Family Papers. These documents account for every purchase, sale, and substantial event that took place here throughout the years. Our story begins with a young builder and sugar entrepreneur by the name of David Weeks. As a young man, David Weeks began working with his father, William Weeks. William Weeks, accumulating a great deal of property in the Phalacheness in the Anticompas in the early 1800s. If I'm saying these wrongs and you're from Louisiana, please let me know. I know I'm effing them up. Okay, by the early 1800s, purchasing most of the Grand Cot, over 2,000 acres by 1818. They grew cotton in the Peninsulanas and attempted indigo and cotton in the Atticus. In the early 1800s. Oh. God dang it. Where are they? I hate it when I do this. I lose my place. Okay, they grew concerning. Okay. Where was that? Okay, attempting indigo and cotton in the Atticapoas before David Weeks began concentrating on sugar in the early 1820s. While establishing the plantation at Grand Cot, where was I at? Damn it. At Grand Cot, David found time to court and marry Mary Concord. Mary being 21 years of age and David 32. Damn, that's like a 10-year difference. The couple resided on William Weeks' plantation on Bayou Sierra near St. Francisville. After David's father died, they decided to move to their Atticus properties to concentrate on the production of sugar at the Grand Cot. Though Grand Cot was ideal as a sugar plantation, its location was considered too remote for his family. So David first acquired property on the Bio Park Pajaru, where they lived for 40 years before he bought the property in New Ibra on the Bayo Tokashi in 1825, or Tikashi. Construction of the new house began in 1831 and was finally completed in 1834. One of the only three brick constructions on the bayou in the vicinity. The shadows were constructed in a classical way. Rival styles on the exterior with the distant convict eight white columns across the front porch as the house neared completion in May of 1834. David Weeks left on a sea voyage to New Haven, Connecticut, in an attempt to find a cure for recurring undefeated and undesirable disease. In mid-June of 1834, Mary and six children moved into the new house. The happiness of being in the new house was overshadowed by worry about the absence of David Weeks, who died August 25th of 1834, never having lived in the new house on the Bayou Tichy. Following the death of David Weeks in 1834, his widow, Mary C. Weeks, was kept extremely busy seeking to deal the well-being of the estate, which would untimely become her children's inheritance. Not only was the responsibility for feeding and providing education for her six children, she was also accountable for 150 slaves on the property, consisting of men, women, and children. In 1841, Mary married John Moore. As they continued to raise the children and see the home prosper. Sometime in the early hours of December 29th, 1863, Mary died peacefully in her sleep as Union troops occupied her home and its grounds. She was untimely buried in the garden located in the property. Not long after, John Moore also died at the Shadows on June 17th of 1867 at the age of 78, and he is buried next to Mary. The home continued to pass down through several generations of the Weeks family, until eventually ending up being owned by the National Forest for Historic Properties Society. The group now proudly displays the home as an enterprise for the community, regularly offering tours and other special events. As an interesting piece of collective history, one of the doors to the home has become a celebrity giraffe wall, so to speak. The great-grandson of David Weeks, Mr. Weeks Hall, had quite the list of friends. This is apparent by their names they scrawled on the door, visible to this very day. Some of the names include Arthur Henry Miller, Ellen Zahn, and the director of Streetcar named Desire, and a guy by the name of Walt Disney. You may have heard of him. For years, guests and staff have reported haunted activity of the Shadows on the Techie. Many say that the home is primarily haunted by the former owner, Mrs. Mary Moore. Her shadowy apparition, ghostly footsteps, have been reported here as the main forms of the paranormal activity. During our investigation, our night was filled with unexplained sounds and disembodied voices. It began with an abnormal footsteps, in the empty attic. There was also soon followed by an unknown cough heard by two investigators. They examined everything in the areas, and no one else was present. Further activities seemed to congregate in the room where Mary Moore had died. As various questions were being directed to her, an unexplained cold spot and sudden spike to electrical magnetic energy was suddenly detected. The night concluded with additional strange noises being heard in the master's bedroom, along with what sounds like music playing for the music from that era playing that Mrs. Moore listened to when she was alive. It's So basically, you're saying they heard some old time music from that era, you know. About a year ago, I was holding an event at the portion of the course considered of a hands-on investigation, which we chose Shadows on the Tichy as the location. We were accompanied by a reporter and a cameraman from one of the local news stations to cover the investigation. The reporter covered this story as usual, and we concluded the group investigating with no scientific activity the next day. We wrapped up the class with a summary and had a speaker on matrix and false positive evidence. The reporter returned to finish up her story once the class was over. I was approached by the reporter who wanted to share an interesting story. Although she remained quiet and completely neutral to the belief of the paranormal during her investigation, it was apparent she had experienced something that caught her attention. She stated that weeks before, she had been involved in a traffic accident and had left her hand and arm in severe pain, causing her to wear a brace on a regular basis. She went on to say while she was in one of the bedrooms of the home as we conducted our investigation, she felt a strong tingling in her arm. Following that, stated that her arm no longer was in pain for the first time since the accident. She did not need the brace. I was quite surprised by the story, as I had never heard of something like this taking place outside of pay-to-pray televangelist's ceremonial. She told me the story in such confidence and stated that she did not feel comfortable including the incident in her news report, which I completely understand. So, it looks like this place is a little creepy and creepy too. But that's kind of to be expected with a place that old. And, you know, you've had people die in it, born in it, and, you know, people that have lived there forever and died, you know. So, that don't surprise me, not one bit. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready for our next one. All right, our next story is the Creatine Point Plantation. Of course, this is Louisiana. The grounds that Creatine Point sits on has a Spanish grant in 1876 when it was acquired by Louis Saint-Germain. Records indicate that on December 7th of 1781, the land was then transferred to local farmer Jose Creighton, or Joseph Creighton. His son, Hippolyte Creighton. Okay, why would you name your son that? Anyways, Hippolyte Creighton would go on to inherit the land, eventually passing it down to his son, Hippolyte the second, on July 28th of 1818, would marry Felicia Nada, and the two would go on to have several children. As their family grew, he knew he had needed a larger home to accommodate everyone. Construction began in 1831. and the house was completed. God dang it. Okay, the house was complete in 1835. The grand home would sit on over 300 acres of prime farmland during its prime. During its prime. Okay, I lost my place again. 300 acres of prime farmland during its time, or during its prime. The Shreeton Point had a workforce of roughly 500 slaves that ensured the day-to-day operations of its cotton producer ran flawlessly. Unfortunately, Hypolite would not get to enjoy his home for very long, as he and one of his sons would get the yellow fever in 1939. Okay. Leaving his wife and their son, Hypolite III, to run the grand plantation. So the dad died in 1839 from yellow fever. The Spaniard and Felizant was quite amazing, as she would successfully operate Creton Point for four years to come, standing only 4 feet 10 inches tall. She was a tough little cookie who smoked cigars, managed servants, and is said to have regularly worn slacks, which was unheard of for women of this time. We asked back then, they always wore dresses. This tiny ball of TNT would be most known for an encounter with one of Jean Lafayette's pirates. As I have mentioned, Lafayette and his band of looters and pillagers traveled throughout southern Illinois, making a name for themselves in the only way they knew how. Once Lafayette fled to refuge in Galveston, many of his cronies lingered behind to wreak havoc. On one particular night, one of these pirates approached Shreeton Point with the hopes of robbing it blind. As the individuals approached the home, he must have been enlightened to see that his only obstacle was such a small woman. Surely this would be an easy task for the rough and rugged man of the waters. To the pirate's dismay, she was tougher than a $2 steak. Meeting the individuals at the door of her home with more than her cigar, she quickly brandished a pistol from her pocket and shot the pirate square between his eyes, killing him instantly. With the help of her loyal servants, they dragged the body and carried it to a rare part of the property and buried the body in a small pond there. I guess it was like
I guess it was like this way.
I guess it's like the, I guess it's like they say, when mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. As she grew older in the enormous size of the Creton Point began to be too much work for her, she would hand the house and the land over to her son, Hippolyte III, before moving to New Orleans. The home would nearly see its demise in 1863, thanks to the quick thinking of Hippolyte, it would be spared. Several Civil War skirmishes, took place on the property, which all of the fighting boiled over on the final battle known as the Battle of the Bayou, which we have all came in the next blog. During one of these skirmishes, the home was caught in the crossfire between the Union and the Confederates. Several of these shots lodged themselves into the home and the large oak trees. Running out of resources, Hippolyte made a last-ditch effort to save the home. He ran to the second-story balcony, giving the Masonic distress signal. Union leader and fellow Mason, General Nathaniel Banks, recognized the signal and agreed to spare the home. In true Union fashion, however, they still burned the crops and slave quarters and killed our... Oh, wow. They killed or crucified all of the livestock. Now, that's fucked up. Why would you kill the fucking livestock? You know, and then you burn the slaves' quarters houses down. That was kind of messed up, too. I mean, now they don't have nowhere to stay. But they were slaves, and that was wrong. But anyways, why would they kill the animals? But anyways, the mysteries entangled within the history of the Creton Point seem to grow with each passing year. Legends tell of the spirit of the murdered pirate still roaming the grounds as he once did that fateful evening when he ran into the wrong little lady. The pirate, nicknamed Robert, does not like being poked fun at and is said to enjoy messing with visitors, automobiles, and several occasions staff and guests alike. We'll find the lights, car alarms, or other electronical and mechanical devices just come on by themselves. Sorry if my reading's worse than normal. One of my little podcast lights went out. All right. As one may expect, the ghost of Philetus, anyways. That's the short little sawed-off woman that owned the place, is a pretty prominent force at the plantation. Not much has changed from her living, being as the spirit of Philodicy is determining, and also does not like being teased or questioned. In one encounter, a visitor was openly joking about her when one of her earrings was ripped off her ear and was flung across the room. Now, that's some crazy shit. This woman is sitting here talking about her, And the ghost gets so pissed off, it rips the earring out of her ear. That would scare the shit out of me. Others have seen the operation of an elderly... woman rocking in chairs or gazing out of the upstairs windows. Surprisingly, many feel that the single most active spirit is an individual whom we have not mentioned yet. Felicity's former daughter-in-law, Chastity, has been the most common spirit seen. Often witnessed wearing a long white dress, she gracefully glides through the home as a spectral host of sorts. Those who have had an up-close and personal encounter with her say she gives off a very positive energy, and eyewitness feel at case when she's in presence. Creatine Point seems to be home to quite the smorgasbord of spirits. From a mean old pirate, a meaner old woman, and a caring young lady. One can express the full spectrum at this beautiful home. About the only thing missing would be the ghost of deceased Union and Confederate soldiers who died during the several battles that took place on and around the property. Oh, wait. I forgot to mention employees and owners have also seen the vague apparition of a ragged soldier stumbling through the fields in their tattered uniforms. Being host to so many spirits can only mean one thing: an even wider assortment of activity. It's sort of like the joke, you know what they say about guys with big feet. They wear big shoes. A full range of ghostly encounters have been reported, such as visitors hearing their names being called, furniture being moved on their own, and personal items coming up missing. Excuse me. And even numerous pennies propping up through the house. Popping up through the house. That's weird. Pennies just appearing. Yes, pennies being strewn through the house sounds odd, but it is an encounter I have heard of several different times. Normally, these phenomenons tend to center around old silver dimes or copper pennies. Uncertain as if these specific metals play a role or not, but the acts are strange to say the least. Specific rooms at Creighton Point are also more active than the others. Primarily the Magnolia Room, which has seen the deaths of several young children in the Prime Minister's suit, which served as the former nursery. In other rooms, guests have reported the feeling of their sheets being pulled at night, their feet being touched, and the sounds of faint crying. I could probably go on several more paragraphs regarding all the encounters, but instead of overly exciting about this, I highly suggest that you check the book out, There's a book about this place called Louisiana's Haunted, and it's in there. Today, Creton Point is open for tours and is a popular place for weddings due to the home's beauty. For movie buffs, the entrance of the home may look familiar, as it is grain staircases was the model used for Scarlett O'Hara's famous entrance in Gone with the Wind. I didn't know that. Gone with the Wind Plantation has been on the top of every ghost hunter's investigation place to check out. So, if you ever have time and you're around there, go check this place out for me. Tell me how it is, ladies and gents. All right, let's get on with our next story. I love it to be. Okay, our next story. Okay, our next story is the USS Kidd in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The USS Kidd is a Fletcher-class destroyer named after Rear Admiral Isaac Campbell Kidd Sr., who was killed during the attack of Pearl Harbor. The ship indefinite as DD-661, as it was the Navy's 661st destroyer built, was officially christened and launched on February 28th of 43. From here on, the USS Kidd began its colorful journey through the open seas. Its first excursion was to simply be delivered to the Brooklyn Naval Shipyards in an unconfidential fashion. The Kidd arrived proudly flying the skull and the crossbones flag high atop the mast. One can only imagine how odd it must have been to see the U.S. naval ship flying the flag of the Jolly Roger. However, the incident turned into tradition, as the flag became a regular fixture on the ship. What is most interesting is that after receiving approval by the officials, the ship's crew painted a pirate on the smokestack. To this day, the Kidd is known as the Pirate of the Pacific. It is the only U.S. battleship to ever be granted permission to fly the flag that represents pirates. The fun that had been had, and now it was time for the USS Kidd to showcase what it was truly designed for. The ship was commissioned on April 23rd of 1943 in its first duties were to escort new carriers from Norfolk to Trinidad. By August of the year of that year, the Kidd continued its escorts into Pearl Harbor. For the next several months to follow, the battleships continued along with its duties of providing escorts, recruiting downed pirates, or rescuing down pilots in providing anti-aircraft defense. In one particular rescue, the kid fought off 8 Japanese bombers while simply bringing 2 downed pilots to safety and not receiving any damage. It appeared that the USS Kidd must have had a 4-leaf clover jammed up its stern, as it would continue its various missions without much damage to the ship or injury to its crew. Of course, this rare luck would not last forever. On April 11th of 1945, the kid was assisting fellow ships, the USS Black Chenoise and the Bollard, in what was actually a regular raid on Okinawa. In the distance, the kid noticed several dogfights taking place between Japanese pilots and members of the combat patrol. As many of us know, this new era of warfare had brought about the kamikaze pilots, which were the hardest type of attack to defend. Well, because I'll give you a little history lesson. Kamikaze pilots, their mission was, if they got hit, they would steer their plane into the ship to damage the ship more. Or sometimes they wouldn't even be hit. They would just voluntarily drive their planes into the ships to hurt them on purpose. Okay, where was I at? This was type of attack to defend. It was literally impossible to fight off a pilot with a death wish. As even if you shot him down, if he is skilled enough, he would still glide into your vessel, detonating his... detonating his ammunitions. Such was the case of the kid, as the kid noticed a Japanese pilot attempting to dive down into the USS Black. As the plane leveled out to make its attack, it suddenly pulled up, missing the Black and set its sight on the kid. Heavy machine gun fire and a last-minute swing of the rudder proved to be futile as the suicide pilot crashed into the front of the boiler room of the ship. The Kanak force of the crash sent the plane's bomb straight through the other side of the ship, detonating shortly thereafter. The crash claimed the lives of 38 soldiers.
What was that?
Oh, thought I heard one of the dogs yelping. Of 38 soldiers. While also injuring 55. The ship's commander and doctor were among the injured, putting the kid in an even worse predicament. Fortunately, even with the additional enemy planes convening to the damaged kid as a shark frenzy over the presence of blood, the company battleships provided coverage to allow the winged pirate to retreat to safety. Slowly but surely, the kid made its way to the Carolina Island, reaching Otoha only after burrowing its dead at sea along the way. Once repaired, the USS Kidd was back in action, conducting several less critical missions throughout the 50s and 60s. On June 19th of 1964, after over 20 years of service, the Kidd was finally decommissioned. When all was complete, the battleship had gained 12 battleship stars during its career, 8 for service in World War II, and for service in the Korea. On May 23rd of 1982, the USS Kidd has made its last voyage to its final resting place, where it sits to this day in Baton Rouge on the banks of the Mississippi. All right. Visitors and staff who have wandered the narrow corridors and bunk rooms have reported a great deal of strange phenomenon. Guests have claimed to see the full-bodied apparition of a young man in 1940s Air Navy clothes. The tight passaways. Oh, anyways, I don't know what that was about. Anyways, there is a claim of it's a 1940s seaman there, one of the ship guys. People have also seen ghostly appendages, if you may, as arms, legs, and have even been passing through solid walls with no one attached to them. As I typed it, I cannot help but... Okay, I'm not going to read all that. Okay, here's some more. Rumors are they're expected and tentatively worked with the horrible side effects, such as the above-mentioned soldiers sticking out of the walls. Sorry for appearing to vary your topics. But anyways, man, they hear ghost, hear ghost, see ghost, and it's a old ship. But that's the end of the show today, guys. But I'm glad y'all came by. I'm back. I'm sorry. I lost my notebook and I took a little vacation. Kind of take a break from everything. But I'm glad you're back. I'm glad I'm back. Thank you guys for listening. Sorry if my reading was a little shitty this week. Took me 2 days to record this. I kept trying to do it yesterday, but it got interrupted twice. And then today's been good. But until next time, guys, we'll see you later. Have a great time. This has been Ghost Stories Told from the South. Go check out my YouTube page, Ghost Stories Told from the South, too. And we'll see you guys later. Be scary.